This is the More Than Right podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lopez. The ancient Greeks believed what was beautiful was good. After all, the Greek city-states required strong, square-jawed, and handsome males to defend the city against the envious enemies beyond its walls. Today, it's a well-worn truism, especially among our self-flattering Ivy League elites, that those of higher learning are good, moral, and far, far above the great unwashed masses. But is this true? In testimony before the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, Claudine Gay, president of Harvard University, Liz McGill, president of the University of Pennsylvania, and Sally Kornbluth, president of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, appeared to help the committee understand the sudden rise of anti-Semitism on their campuses in the wake of Israel's war against Hamas terrorists. Last October, Hamas launched a murderous attack on Israeli civilians that killed 1,200, with 248 victims taken hostage. Among the hostages was 3-year-old Abigail Edan, a dual Israeli-American citizen whose parents were slaughtered in front of her by Hamas killers. On America's Ivy League campuses, meanwhile, pro-Palestinian demonstrations materialized, with protesters shouting the Hamas slogan, "From the River to the Sea," which is code for the utter destruction of Israel, and chanting, "Death to Jews." Jewish students at New York's Cooper Union barricaded themselves in a campus library as pro-Palestinian demonstrators pounded on the locked door and windows, chanting "Free Palestine" and hurling ethnic slurs. On Capitol Hill, GOP Representative Elise Stefanik pressed the university presidents to answer whether students calling for the mass murder of Jews are subject to disciplinary action under the speech codes at their respective universities. Here's Representative Stefanik's exchange with Penn State President Liz McGill.
Ms. McGill, at Penn, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?
If the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment, yes.
I am asking, specifically calling for the genocide of Jews, does that constitute bullying or harassment?
If it is directed and severe or pervasive, it is harassment.
So the answer is yes.
It is a context-dependent decision, Congresswoman.
It's a context-dependent decision. That's your testimony today. Calling for the genocide of Jews is depending upon the context. That is not bullying or harassment. This is the easiest question to answer yes, Ms. McGill. So is your testimony that you will not answer yes?
If it is, if the speech becomes, if the speech becomes conduct, it can be harassment. Yes.
Conduct meaning committing the act of genocide? The speech is not harassment. This is unacceptable, Ms. McGill. I'm going to give you one more opportunity for the world to see your answer. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's code of conduct when it comes to bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It can be harassment.
The answer is yes.
Stefanik continued this line of questioning with Harvard's president, Claudine Gay.
And Dr. Gay, at Harvard, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It can be, depending on the context.
What's the context?
Targeted as an individual. Targeted as, at an individual.
It's targeted at Jewish students, Jewish individuals. Do you understand your testimony is dehumanizing them? Do you understand that dehumanization is part of antisemitism? I will ask you one more time. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
Anti-Semitic rhetoric, when it crosses into conduct that amounts to bullying, harassment, intimidation, that is actionable conduct, and we do take action.
So the answer is yes, that calling for the genocide of Jews violates Harvard Code of Conduct, correct?
Again, it depends on the context.
It does not depend on the context. The answer is yes, and this is why you should resign. These are unacceptable answers across the board.
The president's tortured answers were clearly coached by lawyers. In fact, one of these attorneys nodded approvingly while Gay uttered that nonsense about expressions of genocidal mass murder requiring a clearer context. Harvard's President Gay can't condemn the genocidal anti-Semitism of Hamas supporters among Harvard's faculty and student body. That's because this pillar of higher learning, just like other Ivy League schools, is an incubator for the very deranged anger fomented through such curriculum as critical race theory. In short, universities have become grievance factories. You see, the simple-minded left has divided our world into oppressor and oppressed, and the big bad oppressors of the world are whites. In his 1967 article titled, "Negroes Are Anti-Semitic Because They're Anti-White," famed black author James Baldwin wrote, quote, "In the American context, the most ironical thing about Negro anti-Semitism is that the Negro is really condemning the Jew for having become an American white, for having become, in effect, a Christian. The Jew profits from his status in America, and he must expect Negroes to distrust him for it. The Jew does not realize that the credential he offers, the fact that he has been despised and slaughtered, does not increase the Negro's understanding. It increases the Negro's rage," unquote. In the book, Mapping the New Left's Anti-Semitism, Leslie Claff observes, quote, "A discourse associated with the perception of Zionists as European colonizers and oppressors of the indigenous people of Palestine, and with the perception of Israelis as practicing apartheid, is the labeling of Jews as white and as enjoying white privilege. This practice has become more commonplace in academia and in public debates with the arrival over the past 20 years or so of critical whiteness studies as a field of academic scholarship," unquote. What's so ironic about today's anti-Semitism on campus is that it's nothing new. While today's academic anti-Semites condemn Jews for their so-called white privilege, faculty and students of the past justified their anti-Semitism in support of white supremacy. Published in the June 2004 Journal of American Jewish History, Stephen Norwood wrote, quote, "The Harvard University administration during the 1930s, led by President James Bryan Conant, ignored numerous opportunities to take a principled stand against the Hitler regime and its anti-Semitic outrages, and contributed to Nazi Germany's efforts to improve its image in the West. Its lack of concern about Nazi anti-Semitism was shared by many influential Harvard alumni and student leaders. In warmly welcoming Nazi leaders to the Harvard campus, inviting them to prestigious high-profile social events, and striving to build friendly relations with thoroughly Nazified universities in Germany, Harvard's administration and many of its student leaders offered important encouragement to the Hitler regime as it intensified its persecution of Jews and expanded its military strength," unquote. Clearly, whiteness has nothing to do with Jew hatred. Author Peter Den Hertog offers a psychological explanation. He says Hitler's hatred of Jews stemmed from his paranoid belief they somehow prompted Germany's defeat in World War I. Quote, "Paranoids have no rivals or opponents but enemies to be destroyed. Or he, Hitler, would not have become an anti-Semite at all. One can see that the identification of Hitler as a man with strong paranoid traits lies a considerable explanatory power. We have now made a step from Hitler's paranoia to anti-Semitism," unquote. Hitler was, of course, a serial killer. These psychopaths exhibit strong antisocial behavior, lack empathy, disregard laws and the rights of others, and lack remorse. The slaughter by Hamas of innocent Israelis last October 7th, which included the beheading of infants, certainly fits this description. It also applies to those who justify serial murders with grievance-filled theories. And that's why Harvard President Claudine Gray can't criticize Jew hatred without condemning the twisted ideologies her faculty and those of other universities pass off as curriculum, a pornography of grievance designed to keep us at each other's throats in a perpetual death match. We think irrational and deadly jihad applies to radical Islam alone. That, of course, is nonsense. Our universities are like that dark cave from which Osama bin Laden issued his drooling anti-Semitic, anti-American diatribes. Diatribes that are currently making the rounds on TikTok, triggering endorphin rushes among college-aged grievance mongers. Grievance and hatred have fueled gatherings from the Nazi rallies of the 1930s to the BLM riots of 2020 and today's pro-Palestinian demonstrations, where we hear demands for the destruction of Israel and death to Jews. So stop thinking of universities as citadels of higher learning and, instead, see them for what they really are: perpetual Nuremberg rallies, where the assembled stretch out their hands and warm themselves by the flames of irrational hate, like Klansmen, before a burning cross. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. If you feel so inclined, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.